Good afternoon, and welcome to Stage Talk, a weekly conversation about local theater. My name is Jean Paul. Mark Murrow isn't with us today. And our guests are Elizabeth Ware and David Edgecombe, here to talk about Libby, which opened last night at Cyrano's. This is a rerun of a wonderful play I saw years ago, so tell us about it.
Hi, Jean. It's great to be back here. Yes, Libby, I think, has become my Count of Monte Cristo, if you're familiar with that actor from, was it Joseph Jefferson?
No, it was actually Eugene O'Neill's father, James O'Neill.
That was it.
Who bought the rights to, I'm sure everyone wants to know about this, the Count of Monte Cristo, and played it for, hold your breath, Liz, you've only done Libby for 10 years. He played it for 35 years.
Oh, my goodness. I'm sorry I didn't sign on for that long. But anyway, Libby is my Count of Monte Cristo. When we opened it at Cyrano's over 10 years ago now, I think.
Yes. Well, I just read the other day it was 97, 98.
Okay. So over 10 years ago, I thought I'd probably do it for about a year or two and then let it go. And here it is, 2008, a new decade, a new century, and Libby still lives. It's played all over the world, I can say now, except Asia. We haven't been to Asia with it. But I've played it throughout the Lower 48 in England and also in Greece, most recently in Athens. So Libby is coming back home after a pretty extended tour. And the run at Cyrano's is great because I'm back in the place where I played it the very first time.
And home, at least temporarily for Livy, was St. Paul Island, a
St.
place
Paul
I love.
And the Pribilofs, yes. A magnificent place and a place that Libby, my Libby, got to visit and play in. And that was probably in the top three sites to play Libby, was right on her own island.
How did they take it?
That's an interesting question. I must admit, at the beginning, some of the people that knew her story were not terribly interested in coming to the performance. In fact, one woman in particular said, I don't want to hear about what she thinks of the island.
Might give a little background on this, because the natives have been sorely treated in the Pribilofs and well all over Alaska. And one of the stories that an elder told us there was that we weren't allowed to bring our women at all. We were here just almost slaves to the seal harvest. And here's this white woman who comes along and suddenly finds herself the only woman, American woman, on the Pribilofs. And there was some bitterness associated with it. But after the people saw the show, and after they realized that Libby grows and gains knowledge of the people of the Pribilof Islands, and it just is an uplifting experience. And we had many of them come and talk to us about even having what may be genetic memory. Some of them said, I remember my grandmother telling me about her grandmother meeting Libby and how what a wonderful experience it was. Now, these are generations we're talking about, passing on the life of Libby, who went there first in 1879.
Yeah, I was going to say, we might be getting ahead of ourselves, because some people might not know that, and I'll do the quick, very short version. Libby is the story of a Washington, D.C. socialite who, with her husband in 1879, goes to St. Paul Island in the Pribilofs. Her husband is one of the American agents who has been hired to oversee the seal harvest for the United States government. She is credited as being the first American woman to go to the Pribilof Islands. And in 1879, it was quite an arduous journey. So the play is the story not only of her time on the Pribilofs, but also how she came to be in a position to go with her husband to the Pribilofs. It's for history buffs, there is a great deal of talk and insights into the life during the Civil War and in Reconstruction, and especially a woman's take on being an American in the latter part of the 19th century.
It's a very interesting play. I have a special interest in it because I went to the Pribilofs for the first time when it was still under federal government control.
Yeah.
Stayed with the station manager, the equivalent of job of Libby's husband and stayed in their house and for a few days. It was a very interesting trip.
That must have been. It's a beautiful place. And Libby's description of the island when I got there, because people had told me about it, but to actually be there, it's so foreign from anything that we on the mainland are used to. And it's true what they say about the wind. It never stops. And but there is a stark, eerie kind of beauty about that place that I took to immediately. And
my big fascination was hearing Elizabeth do the stories of the seals. And of course, in Libby's time, there were 1.5 million or more seals there.
4.5 million.
Four and a half million. Mm-hmm. And today there's
less
short
than
of a million.
A million.
And so that it has had an impact. But listening to her tell the stories of the seals, and out the window, you hear the seals making noises and doing all of the things that have sustained them for millions of years, or at least hundreds of thousands of years.
For those who are just tuning in, this is Stage Talk, here with our guests from Libby, playing at Cyrano's tonight. And last night, opening, are Elizabeth Ware and David Edgecombe. This is a one-woman show.
Yes. Though there are several characters in it. Libby is the main character, but she encounters all sorts of other individuals through the course of her story, and I have the honor of playing all of those parts.
That must be fun.
it's a challenge. Sometimes I lose track of where they're supposed to be, but I have a physical gesture for each one of them, and that helps me keep them straight. In addition to that, they have different voices, and you know, they hold their, especially their chins, I think. That's how I find my way into each of the characters. I even at one point play a bull seal. For a very short time, but I tried a bull seal.
And sorry. I got my hearing aids.
Being on the Pribilofs, I had a rare opportunity to observe the seals from one of their observation decks. And this is a place that people really aren't supposed to go, but we knew we had connections. So David and I and Jerry Harper came along with us with Sandy. We got to spend about 3 hours sitting on the catwalks over one of the island's largest rookeries, and we got to watch the interaction of the seals. Based on that experience, I added a whole section to the play on how the cows and the pups relate to each other. And luckily, my director and playwright allowed me to add this section because it was so incredible to watch how the mothers find their pups in the rookery once they've been
separated. It's amazing,
separated.
Isn't it?
It's incredible.
Well, it's not really. If you think about, we find our kids easily in a large crowd of kids.
Boy, when you get there though and see these thousands of baby seals,
that's a lot of kids.
The only way they have to recognize each other is the sound of their barks. Mm-hmm. So you can hear the mother get out of the surf and start calling, and it's a thrilling. And one of the things that we realize being on the Pribilofs is that, not that Libby's book is inaccurate, but she was judging everything in 19th century view. So she starts naming the flowers, and when we went to the Pribilofs, we realized none of these flowers exist, but there are other flowers that look like them. She was talking about Washington flowers that really didn't really exist on the island.
East Coast flowers and birds, and of course anyone who's been to the Pribilofs knows that it is the destination for bird watching and wildflower observing.
Oh, yes.
And yet the
and
flowers
spelunking
are
too.
We haven't done that yet.
I think I'll pass on that one.
And it was really thrilling when Sandy approached us with the idea of resurrecting Libby for the 50th anniversary of statehood, because it is such a lesson in Alaska and the transition from the Russians to the Americans in a time that is, well, really an important time in Alaskan history.
Yep. Well, I certainly recommend this play. I for all of those reasons,
well,
it's a good play. Plus, you learn a lot.
I think you'll find, too, it's changed a bit. It has, we've done a little editing, a little changing. Liz inserted this whole original piece into it. So those of you who saw it 10 years ago will find it has changed in a lot of wonderful ways.
Well, and of course, I'm 10 years older, so.
Which only makes it better, right?
I'm asking the audience to believe a lot. It's suspension of disbelief.
Well, I don't know. Liz, you look pretty good.
Well, thank you.
I mean, I haven't noticed much change, and I've known you for a lot longer than 10 years. So.
Thank you. I seem to feel it. I guess strapping on the corset is a constant reminder that time has passed.
I was asked the other day, why do you have to wear a corset?
That's a good question. For people who've seen the show, I am dressed in 1879 traditional ladies' clothes, and that involves a corset. It completely changes how a woman carries herself, and a woman of that period would have sat a particular way. There's no slouching down in chairs. There's no slumping. So the corset, it's more than a reminder. It's the way it forces you to move the way women in that period would have. And I wouldn't be comfortable without it.
You're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. I'm old enough to have worn one once. And
really?
Just a strong girdle.
Right.
But my grandmother wore a corset.
Yes. I remember my grandmother wearing girdles and undergarments that pulled her in. They weren't like a corset that you lace. But, I mean, that woman was tight. You'd go up and give her a hug, and it was kind of like hugging a tree trunk.
Absolutely.
I think the story of how we came upon the script is interesting, too. Liz, you want to talk about when we first read it and how it
Yes,
it got
I'll
to the
do
stage.
I'll do a very encapsulated version, because David and I were in Russia when we, oddly enough, when we read Libby. We were over there working on a play with a theater in Vladivostok, and my mother came to visit us. She asked what she could bring for us, and we said, books in English, because we didn't read Russian, and peanut butter. So she brought a couple of huge jars of peanut butter and several books, and one of them was Libby. My mother lives in Arizona, and she had found this book and had read it and said it was really compelling. So we fell in love with it in Russia and then came back here to produce it.
Wonderful. How wonderful. Well, unfortunately, I'm afraid that's all we have time for today. Thank you for coming, Liz Ware and David Edgecombe.
Thank you, Jean, for having us.
And enjoy your run of living.
Oh, we will. Thanks.
And now, here's the Stage Talk calendar. At Out North, Under 30 continues for one more weekend, tonight and tomorrow at 7 p.m., and Sunday at 4 p.m. For tickets, call Out North at 279-8099. Anchorage Community Theater presents The Last Night of Ballyhoo. It completes its run this weekend, so tonight at 7, and tomorrow at 7, and Sunday at 3 p.m. This is a very good play. I watched it recently, and I liked it a lot. For tickets, call 868-4913 or go to actalaska.org. Act Alaska is all one word. And finally, Cyrano's presents Libby. This program started last night and runs through January 25th, Thursday through Saturday at 7 p.m., and Sunday at 3 p.m. For tickets or information, contact centertix.net or 263-ARTS. And that's it for this week's Stage Talk. Until the next time, I'm Jean Paul. Thanks for listening.